Even if you don't know his name from the byline, chances are you've read some of the writing that my next guest does on a daily basis. Peter Montgomery is a senior fellow at People for the American Way, and along with his colleagues, Peter provides some of the best reportage on just how aggressively the religious right is trying to change the very nature of this country. Recently, when three presidential candidates attended an Iowa hate fest misleadingly titled Freedom 2015, the only video available, even to national journalists like Rachel Maddow, came courtesy of RightWingWatch.org, a project of PFAW, and one of the places you'll find Peter Montgomery's work. With the year drawing to a close, I wanted to invite Peter back on State of Belief to look back at some of the far right's biggest hits, so to speak, as well as the progress LGBT Americans have made in 2015. Peter Montgomery, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Thanks. Always happy to be here.
Look, you spend a lot of your time writing about the dark side. Before we go there, how would you grade this year for LGBT rights overall?
Sure. I mean, we had some amazing progress with the Supreme Court decision granting marriage equality nationwide, which is really kind of an earth-shattering decision. And it leads right into the story of the backlash against that and the debates we're going to see in the election year around religious liberty and how that will play out in the next big goal for the LGBT movement, which is getting everybody covered by non-discrimination laws. So yeah. I think there was some great progress there.
Give me the top three positives for you.
I would say the marriage equality decision. I would say the fact that there was some strong mobilization against some of the religious exemption laws that were tried to be pushed around the country. And I would say polling that shows that there's continued progress in public opinion, both on marriage and non-discrimination, and the fact that even among white evangelicals, we get 60% support for workplace non-discrimination laws. And I think that's a real sign of the long-term impact that our advocacy has had.
Mm-hmm. Was Houston an exception that won't be repeated, or is that one that's going to have to be dealt with in a lot of other places?
It's going to have to be dealt with. It certainly was a piece of bad news. We're going to see it fought out, I think, repeatedly. It's clear that the right knows that they have a hard battle against discrimination laws. You know, they can't really make a principled argument against that. So they've latched onto this promoting fear around bathrooms and hysteria as a way to do it. And the ads that they ran in Houston were so ugly and so unprincipled and inflammatory that I really found it shocking. I don't know why anything surprises me anymore about the religious right, but I still get surprised. And those ads surprised me. And because they worked for them, we're going to see that same campaign, you know, that LGBT equality and that non-discrimination laws are a threat to children. It's going to be fought out in Jacksonville, Florida. And so there's no question that as we push for non-discrimination laws around the country, we're going to see that tactic. And so advocates for equality really have to figure out a better way to take that on.
Yeah. Tell me how you see that increased backlash. What are the leading edges of it?
Well, I think one of the big leading edges is that we see pretty much unanimity among the Republican presidential candidates talking about LGBT equality as a religious liberty issue. This is something that the right wing has been trying to change the frame for a long time. The evangelical leaders and their allies in the Catholic hierarchy have really made a push to frame all of these equality issues as religious freedom issues. And that is now how the Republican presidential candidates are talking about it. So they've really adopted that. But we also have seen more extreme backlash. We've seen calls for nullification, for states to simply ignore the Supreme Court. And we have, you know, presidential candidates and state Supreme Court justices among the people making that argument, that the ruling is itself illegitimate and should be treated that way. And that's a little more troubling. And we have Ryan Anderson from the Heritage Foundation, who's one of the, you know, fresh young faces of the anti-gay right, has sort of put out a book laying out a long-term campaign to resist this, building on the model of how the right resisted Roe v. Wade. And for 40 years, they've been fighting and chipping away and undermining women's access in spite of that decision. And he's laid out a roadmap to make a generational campaign against marriage equality. So this is not going away.
People keep saying, well, what's so different? You say they're changing the definition of religious liberty. How are they changing the definition of religious liberty?
Well, we can go back to the Supreme Court ruling in Hobby Lobby, which, as people probably remember, was a large corporation owned by a religious family that wanted to oppose the Obama administration's requirement for contraception coverage. And the Supreme Court's conservatives in that case really gutted the Religious Freedom Restoration Act in two important ways. One, instead of requiring an inquiry into whether a law was substantially burdening a person's actual exercise of religion, they completely watered that down to anything that offended someone's religious beliefs. And that's a huge difference. It really tips the scales on the balancing act between religious liberty and other important interests. And then they also, they sort of ignored the harm test, dismissed in this case that there was no actual harm. And we've seen that that's not true. And so going forward, one of the arenas that we may have to be able to push back on is to really look at those third-party harms and convince the court that that's going to be a real issue.
Yeah. Peter, you write a lot about far-right extremists who hijack the language of religion to advance agendas of bigotry. Who are some of your worst of the worst from this past year?
Well, I would say there's a radio show host, a guy named Kevin Swanson, who has repeatedly called, you know, says that gays should be executed. And what was so troubling about him was not so much that he's this extremist voice out there, but that he had three Republican presidential candidates come to a conference that he put on and happily share a stage with him, even though People for the American Way a week before called on all of them not to go, put out the record. So there's really no plausible deniability for Ted Cruz, Bobby Jindal, and Mike Huckabee, who went and shared a stage with someone who's repeatedly called for the execution of gay people. So I would put him near the top of the list. There's another guy who does a lot of online videos named Theodore Shubat, who also says that not only should gay people be executed, but that gay-affirming Christians are worthy of death. And he appeared in a documentary that was released this year by Janet Porter, who's a religious right activist, anti-choice and anti-gay activist. Her documentary included, you know, Rand Paul and Mike Huckabee and a couple of members of Congress. So there's this disappearing line between what you might call mainstream anti-gay work and then this really extreme, frightening anti-gay work. I spent a week in Salt Lake City at the World Congress of Families, and the day before that actually started, the really anti-gay right had their own one-day sort of pre-conference. And Brian Kaminger from Massachusetts was one of those. And he said, you know, we ought to be insulting and denigrating people because the Bible says that people who tear down public morality, that those people must be destroyed. And that was his call. So extreme rhetoric is out there. And it's really troubling to me. There is so little effort made by people who want to be president of the United States to distance themselves from it.
Would the people that you've mentioned be the ones that you're most worried about?
It's hard to say. I mean, I'm most worried about, you know, someone like Ted Cruz becoming president. So, you know, I'm most worried about the impact that someone who shares a, you know, really corrupted view of what religious liberty is, who shares antipathy for LGBT equality, you know, becoming president and putting three or four people on the Supreme Court. So that's what I'm most worried about.
Sure. What's the one story that you followed this year that you kept thinking, I wish this story would get more press? I wish the press would be aware of this and tell the whole story. I think it would help us.
I think one of the things that we've been fascinated by is the amount of love shown by the American religious right for Vladimir Putin, even as he is, you know, positioning himself in opposition to American interests in so many ways, even as we have Republicans, you know, calling him out for the anti-democratic strongman that he is. We have American religious right continuing to gush over him because they're so enamored of his anti-gay policies. You know, Franklin Graham went over and gushed about how Russia is going to, you know, be the sort of standing strong for Christian civilization. And that he's just one in a long parade of people. So that's something that I think they should be held accountable for. And another is the close connection with the really serious anti-gay laws that we see in Africa. You know, the World Congress of Families this year honored someone who's been a vocal defender of the laws in Uganda and Nigeria that put people in jail for years and years and years for being gay or for even advocating for gay equality. And yet they tried to position themselves as not really anti-gay, as just pro-family. And the contradiction is really stark. So we have a lot of American religious right figures that are intimately connected and participants of the World Congress of Families. And so I hope that they'll be held accountable for the extremism and the actual brutality and violence that they support by supporting that kind of legislation overseas.
What do those of us who talk about religious freedom all the time need to do as we talk about its importance and fear that it's going to be misused?
I wish I had a magic answer for that one. I think talking about religious freedom, what it is and what it isn't, and the fact that we do cherish it, that we're not opponents of religious freedom, that we also see this as a core constitutional guarantee. Yeah. I mean, right now, people who cry religious freedom when they're talking about LGBT issues are the same people who say we should not let Muslims have mosques in this country, or we should not let refugees in unless they're Christians. And that is so un-American. So I think pointing out those hypocrisies where we can and saying that the freedom to believe and practice your faith, we do defend. What we don't defend is using your faith to hurt other people. And that's a real clear distinction.
Peter Montgomery is senior fellow at People for the American Way. His writing on LGBT issues and the religious right is voluminous. His writings are voluminous. You're always good, and it's always good to have you on the show. You enlighten us and in some ways inspire us to do what we need to be doing on this issue. Thank you for being here again.
Thank you, Welton. I'm so glad you're still doing the show.
Thank you.